Good evening and welcome to Maine Public's Your Vote 2016 Second District Congressional Debate. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This contest between incumbent Republican Bruce Poliquin and Democratic challenger Emily Kane has garnered national attention. Tonight we'll hear from both candidates in a setting that's less formal than the traditional debate format. First, some background on the two candidates in alphabetical order. Emily Kane moved to Maine from New Jersey with her family when she was 17. She studied music education at the University of Maine and holds a master's degree from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. In 2004, at the age of 24, she was elected to the Maine House and rose to become the chairperson of the Appropriations Committee and then minority leader in 2010. She later served in the Maine Senate and worked for more than a decade at UMaine. 2 years ago, she lost to Bruce Poliquin in the race for the 2nd District. Now to the man who won that contest. Bruce Poliquin was born in Waterville and studied economics at Harvard. He built a career in investment management in Chicago and New York City, and later returned to live in Midcoast, Maine, where he has been in the real estate business. After losing a bid for governor in 2010, he served as state treasurer and won his first term in Congress 2 years ago. Thank you both for being here. And the coin toss says that Emily Kane is first. Emily, why are you the best candidate to serve Maine's 2nd Congressional District?
Thank you so much, Jennifer. And I'm so honored to have this opportunity to talk directly to the people of Maine about the important choice that they have before them in November. My background in the legislature is one I'm proud of. I served as the appropriations chair, balancing difficult budgets during the recession. I led my party and worked across the aisle to help bring about the largest tax cut in Maine's history, to lower energy costs, and to try to bring good jobs back across Maine. That's really what this election is about. It's about putting Mainers back in charge of our economy. A lot of people know my legislative background, but they don't know that my dad is a shoe salesman, and my mom is a sign language interpreter and a teacher. I'm the oldest of three girls, and I learned about good jobs and hard work and getting through tough times watching my parents. My parents worked hard to manage the ups and downs of the economy, sometimes being forced to move our family or change jobs under very difficult situations. I'm proud that I learned from them the value of hard work, the value of staying at it time and time again. That's what I did in Augusta, and that's what I want to do in Congress. The problem is right now we have a Congress that's not looking out for us, and we have a congressman who's part of that problem, a congressman who's out for himself and the Wall Street funders who fund his campaign. This election is about who's going to have your back and who can fight for you effectively. I'm ready to do that and put my record to work in Congress. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Emily. Bruce Poliquin, why are you the best candidate to serve Maine's 2nd Congressional District?
Thank you, Jennifer, very much for the opportunity to be here. First of all, I think it's really important to have someone like myself who grew up in Maine. I'm from Central Maine. I was born and raised here. Mom and Dad are also from Central Maine, born and raised here. And my grandparents are also from Central Maine. So if you're going to share the values of the people that you represent, it's really important to make sure you understand the people you represent and understand the communities that you're representing. Now, the key issue before us, Jennifer, in this election, in our state and in our district, is jobs. We need more jobs. We need better paying jobs so our kids and our grandkids can stay here instead of being forced to go out of state. My whole career until several years ago when I got involved in public life has been to create jobs, hire people, run businesses. So I understand how the economy works. I understand how to create jobs. This is something that I've been doing until I, as I said, became state treasurer. Now, when Emily says that I'm out for myself, I'd like to bring something to everyone's attention. First of all, is that I sleep in my office on a pullout bed. And I come back just about every weekend to stay connected to the people that I work for. I also refuse the Cadillac health care plan that's provided to members of Congress. I have my own health care plan that I've been paying for quite some time. I also refused the thrift savings plan that's offered to members of Congress. I've had a career, Jennifer. It's been a great one. I have a wonderful son who's 26 now and doing well. Mom and Dad are quite senior, but they're doing great. This is my time to give back. And I'm giving back by bringing job skills to Congress. We have too many career politicians. And as you mentioned in Emily's bio, she grew up in New Jersey and she came to Maine to go to the university. And she's been running for political office for a dozen years ever since. So those are political skills. We need job creation skills. We need business skills in Washington. We have too much bickering and too much fighting down there, and that comes with career politicians doing anything to get reelected or get elected. I'm a business guy.
All right. Well, Bruce Poliquin, the first issue question goes to you. Maine's opiate epidemic is worsening. Overdose deaths in Maine are up 31% in 1 year. What can be done about this epidemic? What is the role of Congress, and what would you as a representative do about it?
This is very personal to our family, Jennifer. We dealt with this in our family for 35 years with my brother. Jim was a great guy with a big heart and one heck of a musician, by the way. He got wrapped up in this stuff, and he's no longer with us. I understand this issue very well, and we've been doing everything humanly possible at the federal level to help the state of Maine. And this is all hands on deck, Jennifer. This is federal, state, and local. First thing, we cannot give up on these young adults. And in cases, our aunts and uncles and parents. The folks that are addicted to opioids and heroin, we cannot give up on them. They don't want to be addicted, but they're trapped in this poison. Second of all, if someone has a problem with addiction, you've got to go and tell someone. Don't be embarrassed. Don't be ashamed. Go and tell someone. Next, we need to make sure we have plenty of beds for folks that are recovering. And then once they recover, we need to hold these individuals accountable for healthy behavior. Some of the most wonderful experiences I've had the couple years is meeting with recovering addicts. It's very hard on them. It's incredibly hard on their families, but the rewards are tremendous. They can get better.
You say there need to be more beds. Who pays for those beds?
Well, we have voted for and extended additional funding at the federal level to flow to the states, so the states have additional resources to deal with this. But this has got to be done, Jennifer, at the local level. But everyone's got to be involved. The federal government can be involved to make sure that we help secure our borders. You know, 98% of this poison, heroin, is coming over the Mexican border. We need to make sure, and that's why I voted repeatedly, to make sure we secure our borders. But the funding has got to come not only from the state, but also from the federal level, and that's what we've done.
Emily Kane, what can Congress do to help stem the opiate epidemic in Maine?
There are too many families, Jennifer, across Maine who have stories like the one you've heard. Too many families that are being ripped apart by substance abuse, by drug addiction. Too many businesses that are being unsettled by workers who are dealing with addiction and need help. I believe we need treatment, we need education, and we need enforcement. Treatment, because addiction is a disease and people need help when they're sick. We need education to make sure we break the stigma so those who get through, who get sober, can get back to work and can get back to living a full life. And we need enforcement. We need to make sure our law enforcement officials have the resources they need to crack down on those who would bring drugs into our state, to those who would sell drugs in our state. It has to be an all of the above situation. And this is something that there should be no partisan disagreement on. This is something that is everybody's challenge and everybody's obligation to dig in and help. And when it comes to funding, I know right now the Congress has passed a small amount of funding as a start, but the full request there is over $1 billion. I hope the Congress can fund it all the way through, because this is the time where if we don't take action, if we don't get our law enforcement, our treatment professionals, and our communities the support they need, it's only going to get worse. But I'm ready to partner with Democrats, Republicans, and anyone who's ready to work on taking on this terrible, terrible crisis across our state.
Emily, during this campaign season, each of you has been both the beneficiary and the victim of a lot of advertising funded by so-called super PAC money. Given that, do you believe the campaign funding system needs reform? And if so, what needs to change?
Well, the real problem is all of the secret money and the big money in politics right now. It's terrible. We see whether it's negative ads or money you can't see where it comes from. And this is something that the congressman and I fundamentally disagree on. I believe in transparency. I believe that those who aren't making contributions to super PACs or any of these organizations need to reveal their donors. I believe we need to overturn Citizens United, which has really taken the voice away from people. I'm proud that in my campaign, more than 3,500 Mainers have stepped up and made personal contributions. My people-powered and people-funded campaign is what's making me able to reach out to so many across the state. By contrast, the congressman voted to say that those big super PACs, those big organizations, can keep their donors secret. when their donors are secret, that means foreign money could potentially be coming into our state, potentially be coming in and speaking louder than the voice of Maine people. That's wrong. I would never take a vote like that. It's time for us to put people back in charge of our political system and get this big money, this dark money, this secret money out of the way.
Bruce Poliquin, do you believe the campaign funding system needs reform? And if so, what needs to change?
Jennifer, this is absolutely horrendous. We have seen millions and millions of dollars pour into our state with these super PAC funds. There are five or six of them that are falsely criticizing me, attacking me for who I am, what my career has been, and what my vote record is. It's absolutely true. Now, let me give you an example of this. There is a super PAC called End Citizens United. End Citizens United Super PAC. They have come up to Maine to support my opponent, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars attacking me, and their stated purpose is to get money out of politics. And they've come up here to attack me. Now, here's another example of this, Jennifer, is that there's an out-of-state group that claims to be someone from Maine saying that I voted to cut $1 billion from the VA. And Emily has parroted that falsehood. I voted to increase funding to the VA by $4.6 billion. There's a big difference from cutting $1 billion or claiming to have cut $1 billion or voted to do such in voting to increase it to make sure our veterans get the health care they need. That's the example. People are sick and tired of this, Jennifer, and they're turning it off. And I'll tell you... I'll tell you another. Well, first of all, complete transparency. I absolutely believe in complete transparency. All my donors...
But you voted the other way.
All my donors. Another thing that's really important, Jennifer, is that this campaign's been going on forever. Now, Emily's been campaigning for this office for almost 2 years. I won the election two Novembers ago in 2014, and within 3 or 4 months, she started campaigning again. That's the difference. I represent business skills, job creation skills, hiring people. That's what we need in Maine, not more career politicians who just follow Nancy Pelosi's super PAC lines to attack me.
So if I could respond.
Yes, of course.
You know, I think it's interesting. When you hear the congressman mention these out-of-state super PACs or out-of-state politicians, that he's just trying to distract from the fact that I have a strong record when it comes to doing the right thing for Maine people. I have a strong record of focusing on transparency. In fact, a few years ago, when the state of Maine got a terrible grade nationally for our ethics and transparency in government, I partnered with Governor LePage, and we passed legislation to improve the likes of transparency right here in Maine state government. And the truth is, the congressman did vote for a VA budget that was $1 billion short of what the request is. That's true. It was $1 billion short, shortchanging our VA by $1 billion. That's not okay. And when you look at the record is clear. My campaign is funded by individuals across the state of Maine who really care about our future, who want to see the driver's seat put back in their hands when it comes to our economy. And instead, we have a congressman who's one of the top recipients of Wall Street campaign money in the entire Congress. In the entire Congress. That means more than a lot of representatives from New York or California. That's shocking, and that really raises the question about who our congressman is looking out for, and his voting record is really what tells the story. Time and time again, voting to loosen regulations on Wall Street, voting to give tax breaks to those at the very top, and leaving the middle class and working families behind.
That's a great set of talking points, Emily, but I hope everybody in the state of Maine is listening to this, because what you heard was someone who just said cut, and then someone who said fell short of funding. That's the double talk that we hear in Washington. If you increase funding to the VA by $4.6 billion, that's an increase, Emily. It happens to be a 5.6% increase. Now, if it falls short of someone's opinion on what the funding should be, that's fine, but that's Congress's job to do that. Now, what is happening here, Jennifer, is really interesting, is that I want to talk about how I can help Maine families, what I've done to help our second district. And let's give you an example, because Emily brought this up. I don't believe in Emily Kane's idea to impose a huge new tax on carbon. Here's why. When you tax carbon, you drive up the price of energy. You drive up the price of electricity. And the reason why our mills have been having so many problems, one of the main reasons, is the high cost of electricity. When they make paper, or they make New Balance shoes, or they make ships down at BIW, they use an enormous amount of electricity to run the heavy machinery. Emily's plan to increase a carbon tax will drive up the price of electricity. It will kill more manufacturing jobs. Another thing that's really important, it'll drive up the cost of heating oil. And that hurts our seniors. You know, we have very cold winters here. It also increases the cost of gasoline and diesel. That is the wrong way to go. That'll kill jobs. And that's the experience that Emily Kane has brought to the legislature.
Okay, I was planning to ask about energy later on, but Emily, I'll let you respond to that since we're touching on energy now. Do you support a carbon tax? And what other subsidies or plans would you have to change Maine's energy future?
Well, let's start with the facts. The facts are that no one wants to increase the cost of energy. And in my time working in the legislature, I've worked hard to work across the aisle, in fact, working with Republicans and Governor LePage to expand access to natural gas. This is something I take personally. I was at the Lincoln Mill the day we opened the natural gas line to try to keep that mill going. I was also there the night after the boiler exploded, and hundreds of Maine workers lost their jobs. Energy costs need to come down. That's why I've been pushing solar. That's why I push biomass. That's why I believe we need to make sure we focus on the renewable resources that we have right here in the state of Maine. It's one part of the puzzle when it comes to creating good jobs right here in Maine. So there's an opportunity in Maine because of our natural resources and because of the fact that we can put ourselves in charge of that energy future if we focus on expanding access to natural gas and also making sure we're doing everything we can to keep the cost of energy down, which includes helping those with older homes winterize their homes. Seniors, I had lunch today with some wonderful seniors who talked about the struggle they had affording their heat in the winter because their houses need to be winterized. This is both about where we get our energy and how we use it. And, you know, even companies like ExxonMobil are now saying we have to change the way we think about energy. That's where we've come as a country. That's where we are as a state. And I think Maine's well poised to be a leader. And this can be part of how we grow good jobs. But I also want to touch back on taxes. The congressman brought up taxes, and I want to close the loop on that. In fact, I am happy to talk about taxes all day long because my record is clear. I was part of negotiating the largest tax cut in Maine's history. And the congressman, on the other hand, was paying his own taxes late, 41 times, including while he was the state treasurer and as a member of Congress. He's also made headlines for years because he avoided paying thousands of dollars in taxes by abusing a tax loophole in the tree growth tax credit program. It's not the kind of leadership we need when it comes to paying our taxes. And my record of actually lowering taxes for Maine people through bipartisan work is the kind of leadership that we need now in Congress.
Bruce Poliquin, going back to energy, do you support any kind of subsidy for solar, biomass, wind?
I believe we need to have all forms of energy, Jennifer, in our portfolio mix, and also it needs to be lower. But let's go back to this because we just heard a whopper. I'm going to look right in the camera, right at the people of Maine, and just tell you flat out the truth. I have always paid all of my taxes in full, always. Now, the reason why Emily Kane wants to pivot on something very personal that I take very seriously is because her record on taxes is one of hurting our families. Let me give you an example. She just said, I think she skipped over it, something about wanting to lower the price of electricity. By wanting to a huge new national carbon tax, that drives up the cost of electricity that kills jobs. We just went over that. She also pushed through, or helped to push through several years ago, a new sales tax on, or a sales tax, the main sales tax, on 102 items that had never been taxed before. Haircuts, a trip to the beauty parlor, automobile. I'm not, if I may, Jennifer, I'm responding
to. Is this the proposal during Governor Baldacci's?
It was administration. It was, I think it was 2009. It was so onerous on the poorest among us to pay this new sales tax on 102 new items, never been taxed before, that it was rescinded in a people's referendum, I think it was 2010. On top of that, she talks about working with the governor to implement income tax cuts. She campaigned and worked as hard as she could against those income tax cuts. I was the state treasurer at the same time. And once they were passed, she then said, I hate those. Now, what she doesn't say is those income tax cuts removed thousands of the poorest Mainers among us from paying Maine state income tax. We need to help our families, not hurt them. My record is very clear lower energy costs, lower taxes for everybody, especially the working poor, so they can keep more of their own money. Our businesses can grow. We can create more jobs. Emily Kane has zero experience running the economy, zero experience creating jobs. And when she was in the state legislature, she voted 71% of the time against Maine businesses and their workers. This is something that was scored by the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, who has endorsed me. They're a nonpartisan group, and she voted against businesses.
So I want to get to the bottom of what all these ad campaigns have been. Are you saying here today that you did not put any of your land in the tree growth tax abatement program, that you never put any land, waterfront land, into that program?
What I am saying, Jennifer, is that I've paid every single tax I've owned, always and in full.
But did you owe lower tax because you took advantage of that program?
Jennifer, I'm in the real estate business. I have properties in different parts of the state. And when I get a tax bill, I look at it, I scrutinize it, my business manager does it with me. And property is taxed different ways depending on the parcel it is. And this happens to be a parcel along the coast. There are other parcels that are not. And I've paid every dollar I've owed in taxes, always. I'll tell you, the issue when it comes to taxes, Jennifer, is not individual attacks that have been levied against me, and I've been paying taxes longer than Emily Kane's been alive. It's the taxes that she has raised on our hardworking families, sales taxes. She hated the income tax cuts that were passed, and now a huge new carbon tax. Those are the taxes that impact our lives here in Maine.
Emily Kane.
Jennifer, thank you so much. I'm happy to respond to all of that. Quick thing, when you hear Bruce mention my age, it's just him trying to discount my experience. I'm proud of the fact that I've served the people of Maine for a decade, in the House and the Senate, balancing budgets in the recession, lowering taxes, and working across the aisle to do it. I believe if you want to serve in Congress, you should be proud of public service. That's why I'm so proud, and I think it's pretty much a cheap shot to talk about my age, when really I come with more experience than anybody else in this race. I'm proud to talk about my record on small business. In fact, a few years ago, I earned a national award for supporting small business because I worked across the aisle with then Senate President Kevin Ray to create a program that has led to rural investment in our communities, including the mill in Baileyville, where they added 80 jobs. Unlike the congressman who voted against the Export-Import Bank, leading to 80 jobs that didn't come to Bangor. When we talk about the 2011 budget, we have to talk about the facts and the timeline. That original budget, as proposed by the governor, the one in question in all of the ads, was full of tax cuts for the rich. It was full of throwing Mainers right under the bus on the health care program. But I believe the best budgets are ones that are bipartisan. So I stayed at the table with my caucus, even as my caucus, the members of my party, many of them, hated those tax cuts, and I talked about that. But I didn't. My definition of success was a balanced budget that lowered taxes. I've fought to lower the income tax for the last 12 years. I've been a part of every bipartisan effort to do that, and that's the kind of work I want to bring to Congress, where we get results and we lower the income tax like we did in 2011.
We're going to move on to another issue here. No, we're going to move on to another issue. Now, both of you criticized President Obama's decision to use an executive order to designate a national monument in Maine, but now the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument is a reality. What is the best path forward, Emily Kane? What do you envision for the future of the park and the communities near it?
Thank you so much. It is time to leverage this opportunity. There's no question to me that the monument wasn't enough of a guarantee, and that's why for me in Congress, I'll be holding the National Park Service accountable. I'll be holding the Department of Interior accountable to make sure that the promises made are about hunting, fishing, snowmobiling, and local access, that those promises are kept, and the funding that's supposed to come to the Katahdin region will be there. I'm ready to work with local landowners to make sure that that relationship is positive so we can keep the woods working in the Katahdin region and make sure, as a member of Congress, I believe it's my job to bring people together, to bring together local, state, federal officials, as well as financial institutions, educational institutions, and local businesses. I was just up in Millinocket the other day and heard a great story about a local bed and breakfast that's been full since August. That's a good sign, but it's not enough. We need to have a concentrated effort on that region to build the infrastructure out so we're ready, so that our economy in that area is not just about the monument, but actually about a year-round economy where we build things and make things and grow things to create good jobs, the kind of jobs that used to be there at the mill. A good job, Jennifer, is where you can work one job, you earn enough money to pay your bills. You can own a house, have a car, save to help your kids go to college for retirement, and maybe even go on a vacation every once in a while. That's not too much to ask, and that's my definition of success for the Catan region, is bringing back those year-round good jobs, and I'm ready to be a part of doing that.
Bruce Poliquin, yeah. Now that the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument is a reality, what is the best path forward for that region?
First of all, we have to make sure the local folks are involved, Jennifer, in the management of the land such that we have access for recreational uses like snowmobiling and hunting and camping and fishing and kayaking and canoeing and what have you. But also we need to protect the 4,100 good-paying career jobs that are supported by that working force. You know, I objected to the president, any president, having the sole authority to come to Maine, stick a flag in the ground and say, this is now federal land, we own it. So I objected to that. He made that decision, he had the authority to do it, and now we need to work with everybody to make sure we protect those jobs. Also, I might say, we need to welcome recreational jobs. Work with everybody. That's why our congressional office has been very involved to make sure that the management plan that the National Park Service is working out, make sure we protect those jobs and also invite other jobs. But I want to loop back to one thing, if I can. Emily mentioned her ability in the legislature to balance budgets. Well, first of all, you have a constitutional requirement to balance the budget, number one, by law. Second of all, she voted repeatedly to expand welfare. And what happened is we ended up in a huge $500 million debt to our hospitals because the state simply didn't pay the hospitals for the welfare expansion that she voted for. Now, that's a gimmick. Since I've been down in Washington, I have pushed a balanced budget amendment to our Constitution. I have voted for a budget that balances over time, and it does it without raising taxes, unlike the president's budget that jacks up spending, jacks up debt and taxes. We need to make sure we grow an economy where our kids can stay here and have an opportunity. That means businesses need to be more competitive, not a huge new carbon tax. We need energy costs
okay,
that
low. Emily, I want you to respond.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. In the 24 bipartisan balanced budgets that I was a part of during my 10 years in the legislature, we not only paid in full those hospital bills, something I personally worked on, stayed late nights and literally saw the sunrise from the room 228 in the State House to make sure that we got it done. Because paying our bills is important. Making sure that those who need help can get it when they need it, and make sure we don't do that while sacrificing education or sacrificing health care for seniors. By comparison, in Congress, the Congress's version of a successful budget, last year the congressman said he was excited to vote for a budget that cut Social Security, turned Medicare into a voucher program, and cut Pell Grants, which means that working families who need help sending their kids to college would have less. That's not my definition of success when it comes to a balanced budget. What is making sure that we hold people accountable on public programs. I've been there to make sure we hold our welfare recipients accountable and make sure that those programs are working well for us so we can save money and put more people back to work.
All right, we do have to go to a
Jennifer,
break. We'll
I'd
be
like
back with a response
that,
after our 30-second break. We'll be
Thank
right
you
back.
Very much.
Thank
Thanks.
You.
And welcome back to the 2nd District Congressional Debate between Republican Bruce Poliquin and Democrat Emily Kane. Before the break, Emily Kane was talking about your recent votes on Social Security and Medicare, and you said you'd like to respond.
Yeah, I certainly would. That's another falsehood and a big one from Emily. I have always voted to secure and protect Social Security and Medicare. And the guarantees for those benefits are always there. That's the way I have voted. I will continue to vote. My mom is 88. Dad is 86. They paid into these programs their entire lives. We have the oldest average age in the country. We need to make sure we secure these programs. So if we could have some truth in this discussion, that would be helpful. Here's another example.
Actually, I want to keep that brief because I really want to get to a lot more comments here.
I would like to take a response, have an opportunity to respond to a false accusation that Emily made. She said that I voted to cut Pell Grants. That's completely false, Jennifer.
Okay.
In the budget, I voted to extend Pell Grants, including the maximum $5,800 per year grant, and also save them mostly for kids that are most in need. For the next 10 years, I was a scholarship student. I scrubbed toilets to get through school. I paid off student loans. So to say that I voted to cut Pell Grants is completely false. And these are the things that have been coming up in this campaign, which is unfortunate.
Bruce, you opposed the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. What is your plan then to provide health insurance for the millions of Americans who did not have it before the inception of the Affordable Care Act?
I was one of three Republicans in the House that voted last year not to replace the Affordable Care Act, rather not to to do away with the Affordable Care Act because there wasn't a replacement. I'm a business person trying to find solutions. Now, what we need to do is we need to keep what works, Jennifer, and replace what doesn't. We now have a replacement plan, and I took the experience from Maine and other states, and I pushed for this, and we got it through as a plan, a proposal in the House of Representatives. Let me give you an example. We need to keep our pre-existing conditions. My son is asthmatic. I think Sammy ought to have the opportunity to buy a health insurance policy that he can not only take from job to job, but insures him for that pre-existing condition. But at the same time, we need to make sure we do away with pieces that kill jobs, like the 50 worker threshold or the 30-hour work week, both of which convince small businesses not to hire more. Now, one thing that's really important that's tied between Medicare and the Affordable Care Act is Emily Cain has supported the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, since inception. In order to fund Obamacare, there was $750 billion that was cut from Medicare in order to fund Obamacare. That is wrong. Second of all, I do not believe in Emily's position that we should have a complete 100% government takeover of our health insurance industry. Everybody that's listening tonight, you've seen your premiums go through the roof, your co-pays, your deductibles. I have a health insurance policy, Jennifer, that I've been paying for years. My policy was canceled on September 15th from Anthem, and my premium went up 45%. There were other families that experienced the same thing. When you have a complete government takeover of our health insurance industry, which is what Nancy Pelosi and Emily Cain wants, you're going to see our premiums, co-pays, and deductibles continue to go through the roof, and you get less care, less coverage.
Emily, you support the Affordable Care Act, but clearly it is imperfect. How would you fix it?
Well, the Affordable Care Act needs to be fixed, and I was actually wondering which position the congressman would take tonight, because he took that vote he mentioned and then just weeks later voted multiple times to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And that's tough, because that's not what we need to do when it comes to those pre-existing conditions and those people who've actually been helped under the law. But there's no question it's broken. That's why it's so frustrating that Congress, time and time again, focuses on repealing it. The small businesses I talk to want to do right by their employees, but they can't afford it, and it's a maze, and it's challenging. The individuals who are following the rules, trying to get their insurance on the exchange, see their premiums go up. But we have also an issue of prescription drugs, and it brings us a little bit back to Medicare, because Medicare, the Congress prohibits Medicare from being able to lower the cost of prescription drugs by negotiating those prices down. That's part of fixing the cost of health care, too. I've done this before. I've taken on insurance companies. When I was in the Senate, I learned that if you got cancer and you needed a certain type of chemotherapy and you had private insurance, that they wouldn't cover it, costing Maine families thousands and thousands of dollars every single month. That was wrong. It took 2 years, but ultimately, after bipartisan work, the legislature overwhelmingly passed parity so that those who need oral chemotherapy could pay just a copay. And that helps families every single day. We need someone who's ready to take on the insurance companies. And that's why I'm so proud that just 2 years ago, the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare came to Maine and endorsed Susan Collins. And this year, the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare looked at the congressman's record and looked at mine and endorsed me. That's the kind of champion that Maine seniors need and that Maine businesses and individuals need when it comes to lowering the cost of health care.
Bruce Pollack, when Emily Cain has endorsed her party's nominee, Hillary Clinton, do you endorse your party's nominee for President Donald Trump?
You know, this is something, Jennifer, that you folks in the press, not, of course, not Jennifer Rooks and not MPBN, but the media has been so consumed with this frenzy, this media circus around the presidential election. The people in our second district hired me to do a job to help build a stronger economy and more jobs and bring my business skills down to Washington. That's exactly what I've done. I'm not getting involved in this media frenzy, and I know it upsets a lot of folks in the media because they live on confrontation. That causes more people to watch the shows.
So your constituents are not asking you.
My constituents are saying the following. They're saying, Bruce, how can you help us build a stronger economy with more jobs? Let me give you an example. We had a great victory last week, Jennifer, that hasn't been reported, I don't think, widely, and I believe your audience might not have heard it. We convinced the European Union not, or rather, to abandon their plan or their idea, their thought process about not allowing us to sell our lobsters in Europe. This is a huge deal. We have 10,000 jobs on the water in Maine, folks that drive or captain rather their lobster boats and they're sternmen. Then there are thousands of others that sell bait and sell rope and buoys and traps. We engaged the delegation. I worked with Susan Collins, with Angus King, and with Shelley Pingree. I worked together with everybody in a bipartisan way. We asked the University of Maine to get involved. They provided terrific research, and we pushed against the United States Trade Representative, the White House, and we convinced the European Union to drop their plan to not allow us to sell our lobsters.
And the question began about Donald Trump, though. Are you not going to state whether you're endorsing Donald Trump?
Here's why this is important. 25% of the lobsters that we sell to Europe. This is a big deal, and I'm trying to answer your question, Jennifer. This is what the people of Maine have hired me to do, to use my business experience, not political experience, my business experience to help save, protect, and create more jobs. That's what I'm doing. I'm not getting involved in this media frenzy.
So you're not going to say whether or not you endorse your party's presidential candidate?
I cannot control who's going to be the next president. Here's what I can control. Working with everybody to have a strong voice in Congress for more jobs, a better economy. My opponent is a career politician. She has no experience in that area. That's what I'm focusing on.
Jennifer, you know what's interesting is that what we have in common between, and there's not always a lot in common when it comes to Governor LePage, Senator Collins, Senator King, Congresswoman Pingree, me, we don't always agree. We disagree a lot, in fact. One thing we all agree on is that that question you're asking about who you're supporting for president is not about confrontation and it's not about media circus. It's about telling the truth. It's about being clear and honest. Because it's not about whether we always agree. It's about whether or not we can be trusted to speak up and tell the truth when it comes to where we stand on fundamental questions about the direction of our country.
Emily Kane, have you ever broken from the leadership of your party on a significant issue? If so, what issue and why?
Absolutely. Several times, in fact. For me, in the legislature, it actually started with my work on that 2011 budget, where I stood as the Democratic leader of my caucus, looking my caucus in the eye and saying, it's time for us to step up. It's time for us to make good on all those times we talked about lowering the income tax. It's time to make sure that we do it in a way that helps working families. That's work I'm proud of. It was difficult. I took heat in the press. I took heat from members of my own party. And in the past, when I ran in a Democratic primary, that exact vote was thrown in my face as telling me that I talked like a Republican. I am always willing to take those slings and arrows when it comes to doing the right thing for working families. That vote, that leadership that I was able to show, that steady, principled leadership about doing the right thing, was a very difficult time. It was a pretty terrible budget when it started. But in the end, that final vote was 147-3 in the House, because that's the kind of measure of success we need. But it took standing up to my own party to get there.
Bruce Poliquin, have you ever broken from the leadership of your party on a significant issue? If so, what issue and why?
Oh, I do this all the time. I have an independent streak. I don't work for the Republican Party. I don't work for the Democrat Party. I don't work for the lobbyists. I don't work for Wall Street, as Emily likes to say. I work only for 650,000 people that I represent in our second district. Here's an example. When I got down, shortly after I got down to Washington, I realized that the Pentagon, the largest bureaucracy in the world, Jennifer, was not issuing 100% American-made athletic shoes to our men and women in uniform when they start basic training. Now, this is flat-out wrong. You need to use U.S. taxpayer dollars to buy U.S. manufactured goods. That happens to be a long-standing law going back 70 years. So I worked with Nikki Tsongas. Nikki Tsongas is a Democrat, a member of Congress from Massachusetts, and we worked together. We ushered a new bill through the House of Representatives, never been done before, saying the Pentagon must issue 100% American-made athletic shoes to our men and women in uniform going to basic training. Here's why this is so important. Those athletic shoes are made in Maine. 900 of the best shoemakers in the world work for New Balance. And we have three factories in Skowhegan, Norgewalk, and Norway. Nikki Tsongas and her district has two. Now, the
Did
Senate,
you face opposition from Republicans on this?
Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding me? Nike, the largest, I believe, athletic shoemaker in the world, absolutely pushed against me. Leadership pushed against me. Once we got it through the Armed Services Committee, 65 to nothing, I lobbied everybody, Republicans, Democrats, to get that through with Nikki Tsongas. Then I had to beat back, or fight back, I should say, a floor vote from a member of my own party, Mark Sanford. We won 255 to 155 on the floor. The leadership in my party didn't want this done, but we did it. We did what was right, and we secured 900 shoemaking jobs at New Balance. Now, one more thing I might add is that the Senate took this language, and Senator King and Senator Collins helped usher that through the Senate. So now we have passed the House, first time ever, passed the Senate. Hopefully it'll stay in the defense funding bill. The president will sign it, and then we have more security and more jobs. That's exactly what the people of Maine have hired me to do.
Maine faces five citizen initiatives this election. I'd like to find out your stance on both of them. I'm hoping that we will not take up the rest of the hour with these answers. But just quickly, we'll start with question one. Bruce Poliquin, question one would legalize and regulate marijuana for recreational use. How do you intend to vote on that?
Well, I think I told you this. We've had experience with our family with substance abuse for a very long period of time. This is very personal to me, Jennifer. I have seen that the referendum, the way it's worded, might be a problem for kids getting a hold of pot if this goes through. But I'll tell you, I'm joining forces with Senator Susan Collins, and I'm not going to tell the people of Maine how to vote. We need to make sure we balance the rights, our constitutional rights to consume products that we want, but at the same time, it's a public health issue. But the people of Maine are going to decide this on November 5th. So I agree with Susan Collins. I'm not going to tell the people of Maine how to vote.
Are you going to say that about every question?
Let's go right down there and we'll see.
All right. Emily Kane, how are you going to vote?
Thank you. You'll find me being clear and consistent and straightforward on all of the referendum questions. I'm voting no on question one. My strict focus is on breaking the addiction problem we have around the state of Maine and bringing more resources for treatment, education, and enforcement.
All right. Question two imposes a 3% tax on incomes above $200,000 to fortify school funding. How will you vote on question two?
I'm voting yes on question two because I believe we need more funding for teachers and students, and it's time for those at the very top to pay their fair share.
Bruce Poliquin, how are you voting on question two?
A 3% surcharge, Jennifer, will put the top rate in the state of Maine, the state income tax rate, to 10.15%. I think the second highest in the country, along with California and New York. We have a state right beside us, New Hampshire, that has a 0% personal income tax rate. So if that happens in Maine, we've got to make sure we think about this long and hard. People of Maine will make this decision on November 8th.
So you're not going to say you oppose it or support it?
I am not going to tell the people of Maine how to vote.
Okay, what about question three, which would impose background checks on the private sales of handguns?
And my position on the Second Amendment has been very clear since day one. I've been endorsed by the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine, which are the hunters and the campers and folks that canoe and kayak and so forth and so on. So we need to make sure we understand that this is one of our constitutional rights. At the same time, we need to do everything humanly possible to keep firearms out of the hands of terrorists, criminals, and those that are mentally ill. Again, the people of Maine will decide this on November 8th. My position on this is very clear.
Very clear that you are opposed to it?
I'm not going to tell the people of Maine how to vote. They didn't hire me to tell them how to vote.
Emily Kane, question three would impose background checks on private sales of firearms. How will you vote?
Thank you. The Second Amendment is fundamental to who we are, to keep and bear arms as a country and as a state. This is something I have a lot of experience working with gun owners in Augusta, whether it's been with the NRA, with local gun owners on protecting privacy rights when it comes to concealed carry permits, also making sure we protect gun owners' rights to keep and store their guns safely wherever they want to. I've also worked with the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine and also many Maine hunters to expand access to hunting, which is a key part of who we are as a state. I'm voting yes on question three because I believe we need to make sure we do everything we can to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous criminals, of those with serious mental illness, and domestic abusers.
All right. Question five would change Maine's elections to a ranked choice system for the offices of U.S. Senate, Congress, Governor, State Senate, and State Representative. Do you support ranked choice voting, Emily?
I'm voting yes on question five. I don't think it's going to be a perfect solution to all the challenges we have in politics. I think There's a lot of other things we need to do. But ultimately, I think question five gives more voice to people at the ballot box.
All right. And I do realize I skipped question four. I'll come back to that, Bruce Pelequin. Question five, the ranked choice voting system. How would you vote on that?
This is our constitutional right and a responsibility to vote. This is a very complicated issue, the way the process would take place. I encourage everybody to look at this very carefully, but I'm not going to tell the people of Maine. I'm just going to ask the people of Maine, go vote. It's your responsibility to vote, but I'm not going to tell you what type of voting process is going to be passed at the ballot box. They can decide that. That's their job.
How about question four, which would raise the state's minimum wage to $12 an hour by the year 2020?
I'm focusing on career, high-paying jobs. Jobs in our manufacturing sector, jobs on the waterfront, jobs in our wood products area. That's what I'm focusing on. I'm not consumed with this issue about forcing a specific wage on businesses. You know, we need to make sure that we don't raise the labor cost in Maine so it kills jobs. We need to make sure we protect entry-level jobs, minimum wage jobs, and everybody wants a fatter paycheck, a bigger paycheck. But we've got to do this by growing career jobs. That's what I'm focused on. That's why I believe that we cannot stand a huge new carbon tax that will drive up the cost of electricity and kill good manufacturing jobs.
Yes, but I asked you about minimum wage, not
I'm
the carbon
tax. I'm not going to tell the people of Maine will decide this. That's in front of them. I'm never going to tell people how to vote. That's their responsibility, and that's their right to vote.
Emily Kane, question four would raise the state's minimum wage to $12 an hour by the year 2020.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'm voting yes on question four. I believe no one who works full-time should live in poverty, and it's important that we put something in place that's predictable and sustainable for small businesses, which is really where we need to be growing the good jobs we have across our state. And I hope it's clear to those watching at home. I hope it's clear to those listening at home what the difference has been in these last five questions. I've been straight with you. I've been upfront with you and direct with you about where I stand, because I think it is important to be truthful. It is important to be honest, and it's important to be direct. And what you've heard from the congressman is a lot of political double talk on these last five questions.
All right. We have about 5 minutes left.
Jennifer,
I'm going to give each of you two minutes to talk about a very important question to both of you. Maine's second district has seen hundreds of jobs lost due to the closure of mills. What is your plan, Emily Kane? And I'm going to give you about 2 minutes to answer to help the towns and communities devastated by these job losses. Bruce Pelequin, I'll give you about 2 minutes after that, and then we'll be out
sure.
of time. Go ahead, Emily.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. There are no working mills now on the Penobscot River. The people who worked in the Lincoln Mill and the Old Town Mill are my friends. My friend Roger worked at the Lincoln Mill for decades. He had to make the tough decision after he lost his job to either stay here and try to cobble it together or take a job out of state. It was a terrible decision for him. He wants to come back and work at home. It makes me think of a guy I met in Farmington who's a sheet metal worker who goes to work every week on Monday morning but hasn't worked in Maine in 4 years. He works out of state, where they're building things, where he can fix things. My dad used to leave every week for work. He used to leave, pack his bags on Sunday night, his cases of shoes, and leave Monday morning. I'm thinking about people like my dad, who've worked harder than ever to just try to do right by their families and bring those good jobs back. My focus in Congress will be to grow our economy by investing in ourselves and our natural resources. Of course, the biggest one of those is our hardworking people, the people I meet every day who are working harder than ever and just want to make ends meet. I'm going to be focusing on forestry and biomass, on farming and agriculture, fishing and aquaculture, on manufacturing, that we can make things here in Maine that they're going to want all over the world. And we do that by connecting the dots, focusing on transportation, focusing on internet access and cell phone service. When you're trying to run a small business, if you can't connect or if your cell phone service drops between Millinocket and East Millinocket, you're in trouble. My definition of success for our economy is an economy built on small businesses owned by Mainers, so that we can be in charge of our destiny when it comes to our economy. I have a record of doing that by lowering taxes, supporting economic development in rural Maine, and working across the aisle to make tough decisions. I'm ready to go to Congress to work for you, not for Wall Street. Ready to go to Congress to work for growing our economy, not growing more jobs someplace else. I'm going to stand up to bad trade deals that send our jobs overseas, and Maine people can count on me to be trusted with bringing those good jobs home.
All right, Bruce Pelequin, Maine's 2nd District has seen hundreds of jobs lost to the closure of mills. What is your plan to help the towns and communities devastated by these job losses?
There are five things we have to do, Jennifer, to make sure we bring these high-paying career jobs back to Maine. First of all, we need business skills down in Washington, not career politicians who have no experience creating jobs. That's number one. Second of all, we need to make sure we lower the cost of energy. We need to this new carbon tax that Emily is supporting is absolutely the wrong way to go. It'll drive up the cost of electricity and kill more of our manufacturing jobs. We need to have lower energy costs. We also need to make sure regulations are fair and predictable. At Sappy Paper, 850 jobs. I helped them to make sure that the biomass regulations were not so onerous and punitive that it would cost them so much money that it would jeopardize the future investment of that mill. And we need to make sure that taxes are lower. If you talk to all the folks that run these mills, it is high cost of energy, it is taxes, it is regulations, and it also, by the way, is unfair trade. And that's why I've always stood up to make sure trade is fair. When I was a kid growing up in Oakland and Waterville, my grandmother worked at Hathaway Shirt Company. My best buddy across the street, Stevie Campbell, his dad was a machinist at Scott Paper Company. I worked the night shift at the Wyandotte Mill in Sydney. My brother worked at the Cascade Woolen Mill in Oakland. We've seen all of these mills go under. And the reason is because of this drip, drip, drip in Maine. High energy costs, high taxes, punitive regulations, and trade deals that aren't fair. I have the way, the knowledge, and the experience to deal with those. Emily Kane does not.
I'm going to take a page from the presidential debate and ask you to finish up. Bruce Poliquin, can you please tell me what you admire about Emily Kane?
I absolutely do. Emily has made a decision to pursue a career in politics. She came from New Jersey to go to the university. After graduation, she's been campaigning for public office ever since. Now, that's not my career. My career has been in job creation, hiring people, and growing the economy. But that's her career, and she's made that decision, and I salute her for having that passion. It's not what we need in Maine. It's not what we need in Washington, but I salute her for having that passion.
And Emily Kane.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. I admire Bruce because he's a good dad. There's no question about that. I haven't had the chance to meet Sammy, but I know that Bruce is a good father. But let's be clear, when Bruce talks about my background, the fact that I moved around when I was a kid, he's really attacking my family. And that's something I would never do to the congressman. I would never question his family or his background. And when he takes cheap shots at the fact that when I was a kid, my parents had to move in order to find good jobs, it's not fair and it's not right. And working families across Maine know that that's disrespectful to the kind of work that they do and the tough choices they have to make every single day. Bruce is a good dad. My dad was a good dad, too. But in order for him to make ends meet for us, we had to move several times when I was a kid. I'm proud of that. That's how I understand the tough choices Maine families make every day.
All right. Well, this debate has been part of Maine Public's comprehensive coverage, Your Vote 2016. Everything is online at mainepublic.org. All the stories, all the Maine calling episodes, all of the debates, you can find it all there. Emily Kane, Bruce Poliquin, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for watching. This program will be repeated on Maine Public Television and on Maine Public Radio several times between now and Election Day. For times and schedules, go to mainepublic.org/yourvote. Good night.